Hi, my name is Cody, and I'm on a mission to break the silence of domestic violence and sexual assault. This production is brought to you by Bolton Refuge House, which is located in Wisconsin. At Bolton Refuge House, we create a safe space through programs and services for all persons impacted by domestic violence, intimate partner violence, and sexual assault, and advocate for social change. Do you believe in curses? You know, like King Tut's curse, where once his tomb was open, the people responsible started dropping like flies. Or what about the Kennedy curse? No family has experienced so much tragedy as them, so surely there's something there, right? Then there's the Poltergeist curse, the idea that due to multiple people involved with the films died, the movie must be cursed. Well, I'm here to tell you there's no such thing as curses. King Tut's curse was nothing but ancient bacteria and pure coincidence. The Kennedy family has always been a bit on the shady side, so were the tragedies really that big of a surprise? But then there's the Poltergeist curse, a series of horrific mishaps that couldn't have been avoided. Heather O'Rourke dying of septic shock at the age of 12 due to a misdiagnosis. Lou Perryman was murdered seemingly by a complete stranger. Then there's Dominique Dunn, who just so happens to be today's topic. Dominique was born November 23, 1959. She would be the youngest child of Ellen and Dominic's, who would later divorce in 1965. She had two older brothers, Alexander and Griffin Dunn. I'd imagine that her older brother Griffin, being an actor himself, may be what inspired Dominique to go to University of Colorado to study acting. She would only be at the university for a year when she decided to leave and pursue a career in Hollywood, which would pay off because in 1979, she would get her first role in Diary of a Teenage Hitchhiker. Her career took off from there, scoring supporting roles in multiple popular 80s TV series. Then, in 1981, Dominique would get her big role that most horror movie buffs know her for, Poltergeist. Yes, things were certainly looking good for Dominique's future. At least, things were looking good until Dominique met John Sweeney at a party that same year. They started dating soon after their initial meeting, and a few weeks later, they would move in together in a single-bedroom home. Of course, once they were living together, John started showing his true colors. He was often possessive and jealous. Verbal arguments quickly escalated to physical beatings. The beatings were so severe that for one of Dominique's TV roles in Hill Street Blues, she was to play a victim of abuse, funny enough. But she didn't need makeup to look like she was beaten because her face was already bruised from John the day before. So the bruises you see in that episode are in fact real. John, of course, would later say this wasn't true and was an accident, but more on that later. And who really cares what he has to say anyway? Now, Dominique and John's relationship wouldn't last long, roughly about 6 months. It would be an attack on September 26, 1982, where Dominique had enough. An argument began, and Sweeney started to strangle Dominique. A friend staying with them heard gagging and entered the room to see John attacking Dominique. John then would stop and tell the friend that they didn't see what they clearly saw, and told everyone to go back to bed. Dominique would pretend to head back to bed, but instead would sneak out a window and start the car. John Sweeney, being the complete psycho he is, would run out and leap on the car hood the second he heard the engine. Upsettingly enough, Dominique would wait for John to get off the car before peeling out of there to her mother's house, where she would spend a few days and ultimately come to the decision to break up with John Sweeney. Now, with John gone, things were again looking good for Dominique. This would be short-lived, however. On October 30th, just a few weeks after the breakup, Dominique would be on the phone with a friend when an operator would interrupt the call with someone else on the other end. I think we all could guess who it was. Dominique would tell her friend to hold on and she'd get John off the phone. Later that night, about 10 minutes later to be more exact, while Dominique was practicing her lines with a David Packer for a miniseries called V, John would show up. At first, Dominique would only talk to him through a locked door, but somehow John would convince her to talk to him outside. Packer would later say that he heard arguing, smacking sounds, two screams, and a thud. Packer worried, but not so worried to run out check on Dominique, called the police. Law enforcement would tell him that the home was not in their jurisdiction, whatever that means. Then Packer manned up, hung up the phone, ran outside and saved Dominique's life. I'm just kidding, he would then call a friend, tell him that if he was found murdered, it was John Sweeney, and then proceed to sneak out the back door, loop around to the front, to find John Sweeney kneeling over Dominique in some bushes. Our hero, ladies and gentlemen. But seriously, despite how mad I get every time I hear Packer's part of the story, it's clear he was terrified of Sweeney. Meaning Packer already had an idea of what Sweeney was like, which made me wonder how many other people knew of the situation and just shuffled their feet. It really does break my heart. Anyway, Sweeney would tell Packer to call police. Strangely enough, they weren't too picky about jurisdiction this time. I have my own theory on why this is, Packer, but I'll keep that to myself. Once law enforcement arrived, John would approach them with his hands raised, saying, I killed my girlfriend and I tried to kill myself. If you think that's BS, don't worry, so do I. Now Dominique would be rushed to the hospital and put on life support. Days later, doctors would discover Dominique was brain dead and would be taken off of life support. Sweeney would be charged with first-degree murder, which would later be lessened to second degree. That brings us to John Sweeney's trial, and to say the whole thing was a cluster would be putting it mildly. Remember just a few seconds ago when I said Sweeney told the cops he killed his girlfriend? Yeah, well, to no one's surprise, he pleads not guilty. What was his argument? Well, you see, he didn't plan on hurting Dominique that night, and, like any other abuser, it's the victim's fault. John says they were getting back together. He was going to move back in, and they were going to get married. But suddenly Dominique changed her mind, and that's what caused the argument. Then John claims he blacked out, and once he came to, he had his hands around Dominique's throat. When he realized what he did, he attempted CPR. Then, when that wasn't working, he allegedly ran inside, swallowed 2 pill bottles worth of pills in an attempt to kill himself, and lied down next to Dominique. In other words, John wasn't planning on killing Dominique that night, but Dominique provoked John, and that's what caused the attack. Quick side note, there wasn't any evidence found to support John's attempted suicide story. Do with that information what you will. Now, to get an idea of how John was, he would be questioned about other times he hurt Dominique. This is where he claims the beatings before the Hill Street Blues episode was an accident, because he was just trying to prevent Dominique from leaving. So, you know, he beat her. Look, John's story obviously has holes, and the prosecution knew this. Again, there was no evidence to support John's attempted suicide. Also, the officer on scene would report that John seemed pretty calm and collected when they arrived on scene, contradicting John's story of being sad and distraught. The prosecution was also going to have a Lillian Pierce take the stand and share her interactions with John Sweeney to further prove John's, let's call it, character. Who's Lillian Pierce? Well, she's an old ex-girlfriend of John's, one who has experienced horrendous physical and sexual abuse from John Sweeney, some of her injuries being perforated eardrum and a collapsed lung. Now, I doubt Dominique knew much about Lillian, and sadly, neither would a jury, because the defense objected to Lillian testifying in the presence of the jury. So, the jury wouldn't learn about Lillian's testimony until after the fact. They also wouldn't know that during Lillian's testimony, John would jump out of his chair and run towards the judge's chambers. Bailiffs would be needed to restrain him, and through crocodile tears, he would apologize to the judge for his outburst. So, John's a dangerous person. I see it. You see it. But due to what evidence the jury was able to see, they didn't. Surprising everyone, John would be found guilty to the lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter, not first or second-degree murder. The sentence of voluntary manslaughter being 6 years, which John initially got. But because there's no women to beat in prison, John would serve only 2.5 years of a 6-year sentence due to good behavior. Now, if you think that's incredibly stupid, and he's just going to go back to hurting people, that's because it is, and he did. However, before we continue on that, there's a bit of a debate on who dropped the ball here. The judge would blame the jury, and the jury and Dominique's family would blame the judge for not letting the jury see all the evidence like Lillian's testimony. And had they seen that, they would have gone for a stricter sentence. Personally, in this debate between was it the judge's fault or the jury's, I think both were to blame. By no means do I think they purposely flubbed the case. I just think there were things working against the judge and the jury. For one, it being such a high-profile case, maybe there was a fear of not being seen as fair and neutral, and due to that there was an overcorrection that fared Sweeney. And there was a lack of resources along with stigma with domestic violence, which certainly wouldn't have helped Dominique's case. But please don't mistake this as me making excuses for the judge or the jury. I'm just trying to make meaning out of their decisions. Now, as you can imagine, Dominique's family would be upset by this outcome, and they made sure Sweeney knew it. For starters, after Sweeney was released, he was hired as a chef at a high-end restaurant. Once Ellen, Dominique's mother, caught wind of this, her, along with friends and family, handed out pieces of paper to people entering the restaurant saying, "The hands that will prepare your meal tonight also murdered Dominique Dunn." Some sources say Sweeney was immediately fired, and others said he quit that night. Later, a man would come across Dominique's story in the paper and reach out to Dominique Dunn because he believed his daughter was engaged to Sweeney. Once Dominique was able to confirm this man's suspicions, he had his son Griffin reach out to the woman and hope she'd reconsider John's proposal. And lastly, just in case Sweeney tried to ever disappear, Dominique would hire a private investigator to keep tabs on Sweeney for years. Sweeney would start feeling the pressure from the family and would change his name and move away. Of course, this didn't stop Dominique from keeping tabs on John until one day, Dominique decided he didn't want to waste his life following Sweeney. Sadly, even with all of the effort Dominique's family had done, they couldn't keep some people safe from Sweeney. The information I'm about to share does come from a TMZ article and mini-documentary that came out earlier this year, so take some of this information with a grain of salt. So TMZ alleges that after John Sweeney was released, he would continue to be violent against women, one incident being as recent as the year 2000. Where a woman got a restraining order against Sweeney due to physical violence. This documentary is called Killing a Movie Star, Grave Injustice, if you want to check it out for yourself. So what does Dominique's story teach us? Well, for one, it doesn't matter who you are. Anyone can be a victim of domestic violence. I think Dominique's story also shows us that getting out of a domestic violence situation isn't as easy as just ending the relationship. Really, there is no right or wrong or easy way to handle an abuser. And sadly for Dominique, with the resources, stigma, and laws being what they were in the 80s, along with John being a complete nut job, I struggle to see her story ending differently had she done anything other than just not going to that party in 81. Maybe the main takeaway should be the importance of recognizing red flags early on in a relationship and trusting ourselves enough when we spot those red flags to cut our losses and leave before it's too late. Lastly, I want to reiterate that curses aren't real. In fact, I think saying Dominique was cursed oversimplifies the horrors she went through. No, curses aren't real. But if Dominique's story has taught us anything, monsters certainly are. But with that said, I hope you have a good day or a night. I'd like to thank you for listening. And now, if you excuse me, I have a movie to watch. Until next time. If you or someone you know is affected by domestic violence or sexual assault, I encourage you to reach out to our 100% confidential 24-hour hotline. That number is 715-834-9578. We have trained advocates ready to help.